Football Weekly is on the air.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and senior editor Nolan O'Rocky. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, we break down the first round of the NFL draft.
Did the Dallas Cowboys and New England Patriots steal Morris Claiborne and Chandler Jones? Did the Bears and Seahawks reach for Shea McClellan and Bruce Irvin?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Welcome to a special NFL Draft edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and senior editor and draft expert, Nolan O'Rocky, I'm Wayne Larrabee. We break down the first round of the NFL Draft.
With the first pick in the 2012 NFL Draft, the Indianapolis Colts select Andrew Luck, quarterback, Stanford.
No surprise there, fellas. The first two picks in the draft came off very quickly. Matter of fact, the entire first round moved along with, I thought, just electrifying speed. The trades that were made, there were three trades made when the first four picks of the round. And when you take a look at this whole thing and you put it all together, what you got here is a situation where this became a very entertaining draft to watch, at least to the first round.
You know, and it really was, and we'll just remind all of our listeners that because we are syndicated in over 100 markets around the country, we do have to tape the program, and with the draft still going on over the weekend, we're focusing strictly on the first round in the can. We will do another draft recap show next week to go through all seven rounds, but we welcome in our senior draft analyst, the author of our Pro Football Weekly Draft Preview book and our Draft Preview Magazine guide, Nolan O'Rocky. And Nolan, we start at the top, the two quarterbacks. We knew it was going to happen. There's no surprise. But I think it's worth revisiting one more time why, in my mind, Andrew Luck was the clear choice over Robert Griffin III.
I think it all boiled down to the safeness of the pick. I think Jim Irsay was looking to replace Peyton Manning with a player who had the smarts, the football intelligence, the wisdom to really make that offense go. I think he's going to be able to step in from day one and pick up where Manning left off. He's a outstanding worker, brings all the same intangibles, and has the accuracy and decision-making to really uplift that program.
Nolan, when you look at the Washington Redskins, Robert Griffin, it seems to me that in Mike Shanahan's offense, where he's always had quarterbacks that had mobility, you go back to Elway and even Jake Plummer and Jay Cutler and those kinds of players, RG3 seems to fit his system.
He really does in terms of the movement skill in the pocket. I think he excels in that area. He has the big arm that you like to go downfield. But the two areas where I don't know that he fits quite as well are the ball security, which is a big factor in Mike Shanahan's offense, and the other premium is placed on knowing when and where to go with the ball. I think Robert Griffin is a little bit raw in that area. I think it could take him a year or even two before he grows comfortable in the pocket. So with 31 fumbles over his career, having lost 14, I think he's going to have to find a way to control the ball a little bit better. So there are some issues that he has to work on to really take his game to the next level. But when you look at the full package and look at the pressing need at the position for the Washington Redskins, I think they had to go with Robert Griffin.
You know, it's interesting, Nolan. There's been a lot of speculation that even though Luck may have the better career, these are both two great quarterback prospects, that maybe Griffin has the better rookie year because of his athletic ability, his ability to improvise, people looking at what Cam Newton did last year, and because of the perception that the Redskins will have more weapons for him to work with. They did, in my opinion, overpay, but got two receivers in Pierre Garçon and Josh Morgan. And yet, the flip side is what you just said. I don't know, regardless of the offense, Mike Shanahan is not going to adjust to a spread option to let him be successful as a rookie, much like the Panthers did with Newton in some respects. And I don't know that the weapons in Washington are that much better than what's in Indianapolis right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to how well Mike Shanahan could scheme around the talent. You look at Andrew Luck with Bruce Arians, the new offensive coordinator. When he was in Pittsburgh, he liked to go downfield and pick up yardage and chunks. I'm not sure Andrew Luck has the arm to become a deep ball thrower either. So we're looking at two situations that I think in the perfect world, Robert Griffin may have fit better in Indianapolis, and Andrew Luck could have fit better in Washington, but it didn't work out that way, and we'll see how it winds up in the future.
Obviously, the pre-draft trade got Washington into the number two spot, but the first trade of the night, the first round of the draft, was Cleveland Browns, Minnesota Vikings. The Browns move up one spot from 4 to 3 to take Trent Richardson. They give the Vikings 3 draft choices, a 4th, 5th, and 7th round pick to do it. And talk a little bit about this move. Is the running back they selected and coveted, Trent Richardson out of Alabama, really worth that kind of a pick and the kind of move they had to make?
Absolutely, in terms of the talent. I don't think there's a better overall player in this draft. I mean, throughout the quarterbacks, and just look at how he grades out as a running back, he was off the charts and has the competitiveness, the run strength, the balance, the toughness. He has everything you want in a running back. And I think Cleveland felt like they had to move up looking at the situation. Tampa Bay was enamored with Richardson, and so was Jeff Fisher in St. Louis. They both were showing some interest in coming up. I'm not so sure that they would have done it, but at the end of the day, Rick Spielman came away with a couple extra picks, and Cleveland got the back of the future. I think he'll be a Jim Brown type of presence for the Cleveland Browns and really establish that physical identity that Mike Holmgren has been trying to establish.
All right, and as you point out, Nolan, the Browns weren't worried about the Vikings taking Richardson. They couldn't with AP, granted coming off the ACL, but still he's AP. The worry was somebody else would slip in front of the Vikings. So now the Vikings have still got the two guys on the board that everybody assumes they want, Matt Khalil, Morris Claiborne. I love what Rick did, milking the extra picks to still have his pick of the two guys he wants. But I was a little surprised he took the offensive tackle over the cornerback, who I thought might have been the best football player in the draft other than the two quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think it all boils down to protecting his investment in Christian Ponder last year. They decided to take Ponder a little bit earlier than I think most people expected. He wasn't able to stay healthy this year in a limited role coming in later in the season and taking over for Donovan McNabb. So I think the situation was predicated heavily on protecting that quarterback.
Nolan, you made the point, and many people across the league made the point, that the wide receivers this year, there wasn't an A.J. Green or a Julio Jones, that kind of caliber receiver. But the first wide receiver to go went to Jacksonville, the 5th pick in the draft as they moved up, taking a pick from Tampa Bay. They get Justin Blackmon out of Oklahoma State. What kind of player will he be? And did he go a little higher because there aren't a plethora of first-round wide receivers in this draft?
I think that was definitely part of the reason. The Jacksonville Jaguars have been enamored with Blackmon since January. And the one thing that's really unique about this first round, we saw 6 trades in the first 7 picks, 9 in the first 15. And it really seemed like teams were able to come away with the players they coveted, in part because of the rookie wage scale. It just really eliminated the financial pressures. You can get these players at a below market wage. And I think teams felt much more comfortable dealing, especially in that top 10 where they never felt comfortable before. So I think it worked out in the favor of the Jacksonville Jaguars and of many other teams around the league.
First round picks 6 through 10 coming up when Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to an NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly featuring the publisher and editor Hub Arkish, senior editor Nolan Araki, our draft expert, and the author of the Pro Football Weekly's acclaimed NFL Draft Preview book. With the 6th pick in the first round of the draft, the Dallas Cowboys moved up, and they got their man at cornerback Morris Claiborne. Hub?
No, and Wayne, I thought everybody who's been listening to me for a while knows I may not be the biggest Jerry Jones fan in the world, but I thought this was the steal of the night, the best move of the first round. I thought Claiborne was the 3rd best player in the draft as a prospect. I think he's going to be a lockdown cover corner for the next 10, 12 years. Yes, the Cowboys paid quite a bit, but you've got to add to this, Nolan, the free agency signing of Brandon Carr. They've suddenly got one of the better cornerback tandems in the league, and it's been one of their biggest problems the last couple of years.
Absolutely, and Rob Ryan definitely needed to upgrade that secondary. I think he likes to play a very physical brand of football, aggressive style, and he's had some trouble doing that with the cornerbacks in Dallas. I think the pair he has now will afford much more flexibility. I think a lot of people were surprised that they were able to pull this off. There wasn't a lot of talk in advance of the draft that the Cowboys were looking to come up for Claiborne, but I think he fits perfectly in that defense. They have one of the best front sevens in football, and this is really going to solidify their secondary.
Well, Tampa Bay had made a move. They traded their fifth pick to Jacksonville and moved back to the seventh pick. The Buccaneers get the best safety in the draft, Mark Barron out of Alabama. There were only two safeties that had first-round grades on them. Did Barron go a little higher than expected, Nolan, or is this the right spot for him?
I think it's a great spot for him, and he was actually the most coveted player in this year's draft. I think a lot of teams were looking at the safety pool and trying to figure out a way to get up. I know the New York Jets were highly interested in moving up for Barron. I know there was a lot of interest even further in the first round as well. I think he's a perfect fit. It was clearly the most pressing need in Tampa Bay with Larry Asante and Cody Grimm both starting at safety. Neither are above-average starters, and I think they really needed to get better on the back end and establish a physical presence. Mark Barron can do that for Greg Schiano.
You know, no, we often talk about first-round picks, particularly quarterbacks, needing a couple years to get their feet underneath them. Head coaches get a honeymoon period. Sometimes NFL owners need a couple years to figure it out. Because I look at this Miami Dolphins pick, and all my sources tell me, even general manager Jeff Ireland didn't want to do this, but apparently the owner felt it was quarterback or bust in Miami, and they took a kid who's not a true first-round prospect.
Yeah, just surveying the league and talking to people who interviewed Mike Sherman in the process and knew how he felt about the player, it was clear that he wasn't sold, and I'm not confident the front office was either. I think it was clearly an owner-driven decision. I think it's going to take Tannehill some time to get adjusted to the NFL game, and he's clearly going to need a year or two before he's ready. You know, Jeff Ireland, I think really, when it boiled down, I think he just maybe helped himself, added another year to his deal. It was a situation where he had to please the owner there in Miami.
All right, so we're eight picks into the draft, and we have yet to see a linebacker selected at this stage of the draft. Then the Carolina Panthers step up and take inside linebacker Luke Kuechly, the tackle machine out of Boston College.
Yeah, there were three players that they were looking closely at, Fletcher Cox from Mississippi State, Quentin Copels was actually in the mix from North Carolina, and Marty Herney, who took a risk last year with Cam Newton, decided to go with the safest player in the draft this year with Luke Kuechly. I think he'll be a very good player there, an excellent fit for Ron Rivera's defense. I think he's going to be an outstanding starter, Pro Bowl type of player in the future.
All right, Nolan, rounding out the top 10 was what I thought was the first real reach of the draft. I know Stephon Gilmore was a late riser, and he's an interesting prospect, but boy, as a top 10 pick, I've got my doubts about this one.
It was a little bit of a surprise. You look at Buddy Nix's history, and he's definitely favored SEC talent. He's always been enamored with height, weight, and speed, and Stephon Gilmore brings that, but when you really study the tape closely, you wonder about his coverage instincts. You get a little concerned about his hands, and there's been plenty of times where he's been torched in coverage, and you know, I don't know that he's the prospect that he's been made out to be. Compares favorably to Sammy Davis, who was a bust in San Diego, and I'm not so sure he's not going to wind up in the same place down the road for the Buffalo Bills.
Coming up, Philadelphia moves up in the first round of the draft. We'll have that and more when Pro Football Weekly continues after these messages. Welcome back to this NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. Senior editor Nolan Naraki, the author of Pro Football Weekly's acclaimed NFL Draft Preview book, is with us as we break down the first round of the NFL Draft. With the 11th pick in the first round of the draft, the Kansas City Chiefs address a defensive line need. They go to nose tackle Dontari Poe of Memphis. Nolan, did this pick surprise you where it came at this stage of the draft?
Not at all, given the need in Kansas City. They really don't have anybody in the middle of their defense. They needed a stout plugger. You look at Dontari Poe's rare athletic ability and size. It's going to take him a year or two to figure the game out, but if he reaches his potential, he's got a very high ceiling. Could be an outstanding fit in Kansas City.
You know, Nolan, you talk about need-matching opportunity. The Philadelphia Eagles have got Jason Babbitt and his 18.5 sacks last year and Trent Cole and Cullen Jenkins coming off the ends. The one thing they needed for a super defense was an interior rusher. They're sitting there at 15, and they realize, my Lord, it's the 12th pick. Only one defensive lineman's coming off the board. They wasted no time trading up to get the next one.
Yeah, Fletcher Cox has some special talent. Rear movement skill for his size, a 4'8 guy at 300 pounds. I think he can make an immediate impact slanting and shooting gaps. when you look at what they had in Mike Patterson coming off of brain surgery, I think the Philadelphia Eagles really felt they needed to find an interior rusher and were very aggressive about trading up to get one.
Well, Larry Fitzgerald, the great wide receiver of the Arizona Cardinals, has been pleading for the Cardinals to get him a compliment at wide receiver, and they were able to do that with a 13th pick in the first round and Notre Dame wide receiver Michael Floyd. What do you think of this pick, Nolan?
Ever since Anquan Boldin left, I think it's really made things difficult for Fitzgerald. Kurt Warner's retirement also played a big part in it. But if they really want to take Kevin Cobb to the next step, I think they need to find more playmakers in that offense. And I think that's what they found in Michael Floyd. There have been more concerns about his character expressed in recent weeks. Teams that have really did their digging were starting to shy away from Michael Floyd. But I think at the end of the day, the Arizona Cardinals felt comfortable with what they were getting.
You know, Nolan, we got to talk about the St. Louis Rams for a minute here, because Jeff Fisher is certainly recognized as an outstanding NFL coach, a real players coach, but never really was considered the linchpin in the front office. As a matter of fact, his troubles started in Tennessee when him and Floyd Peters disagreed with the owner on the drafting of Vince Young, and eventually led to the end. Now, he's got good people around him in St. Louis, but this is clearly the Jeff Fisher show, and I love what he's done. I mean, let's not forget, he's got the Redskins pick in addition to his own in the first round in the next two drafts, and that looks like a could still be a top 10 pick at least next year. He traded down here, loaded up a bunch of second round picks, and at 14 still gets the guy he may have targeted all along.
Yeah, they have so many holes to fill that I think they've really tried to acquire as many picks as they could, and they came away with some more here in addition to what they had. I like the pick for what Jeff Fisher tried to do with his defense. You look at what they did in Tennessee, they'd always clog the middle and find tough, speedy linebackers to get to the perimeter and make plays on the outside. And I think that's what they found in Brockers, a very stout inside plugger who's going to really stuff the run on first and second downs.
So defensive tackle Michael Brockers out of LSU goes to the Rams with the 14th pick. The 15th pick in the first round, the Seattle Seahawks, who had traded down to the Eagles, get their defensive end Bruce Irvin out of West Virginia. This is the first time I kind of heard a gasp in the draft room, at least where I was in Green Bay, and by that I mean not in the draft room but in the media center, and that people said this was somewhat unexpected here and may have been a reach. What do you think?
If you go strictly off of the tape, I don't think it's a reach at all. Bruce Irvin had the best first step, the most explosive edge rush capability in this draft. The big concern was about his character and about his ability to factor as an every down player. But when you really look at the NFL today with the passing game and what it's become, the nickel defenses are on the field 60% of the time, and if they can get that kind of a rush from Bruce Irvin, you know, it could be a good thing for the Seattle Seahawks. The other thing to keep in mind is that there were teams in the back end of the first round. I know the Houston Texans and the San Francisco 49ers were considering taking Irvin later in the round and potentially could jump up, and I think that worried Seattle with where they were, and they felt like that was the right spot to pull them off the board.
Coming up, we continue our analysis of the first round of the NFL Draft. The New York Jets, the San Diego Chargers, the Chicago Bears, just ahead on this draft edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to this NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly. Senior editor Nolan O'Rourke is with us. He is the author of the Pro Football Weekly NFL Draft Preview book. And we're moving into the middle part of the NFL first round draft. Let's take a look at the New York Jets. Defensive end Quentin Coples out of North Carolina goes to the Jets. You know, when you look at him, guys, what do you see, Nolan, in this pick, and how will he fit in with what the Jets try to do defensively?
I think they're going to plug him in at the five technique position. It's a difficult one to find, and Coples has the length and the strength to play that position. I think there's had he's shown better effort through the course of his senior season, there's a chance he could have fit into the top 10. I feel like Rex Ryan looked at him and thinks he can get the most out of him, being a very demanding, motivating type of coach. And, you know, if he turns out to be more mature and harder working than he was in college, there's a chance he could be a solid player.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by what the Cincinnati Bengals did last night with two picks in the first round, and they almost went for cornerstones. You know, did they make a mistake letting Jonathan Joseph get away in free agency to Houston? I don't know. Joseph got a lot of money. He also had a great season. I thought Drake Kirkpatrick was the second best corner in the draft. Again, I've already said I thought Buffalo reached. And for the Bengals to get him here at 17, I kind of like this pick.
If you go strictly off of the talent, it is a unique pick. I think Kirkpatrick has the ability to be a great corner in the NFL. The big concern was the character, and the Bengals have been criticized for not having a big enough scouting staff in the past. And I wonder whether they were aware in the last week that Kirkpatrick has had some issues off the field. There was an incident in Alabama prior to the visit to the White House where gunshots were fired, and Kirkpatrick was rushed out of town, and it's an issue that's still hanging over his status. And other teams have pulled him off of the board and significantly downgraded because of the issue. I'm not so sure that the Bengals were aware, but it is something that could come back to haunt him.
San Diego Chargers' 18th pick in the first round. Outside linebacker Melvin Ingram out of South Carolina. Will he help their pass rush?
He could, but this is another one that was unique. You look at what A.J. Smith has done over the recent years, much like Buddy Nix in Buffalo, they've tended to look at height, weight, and speed. And there were a lot of threats that had Melvin Ingram off the board because he just didn't fit well enough in any spot. They were concerned about whether he had the length to be a good outside linebacker, and many had projected. So I think it's going to be a big question where he plays. A.J. Smith has struck out with Larry English a couple of years ago. I think there's a situation where we could see Melvin Ingram struggling initially as well.
Well, and then the Bears come up at 19, Nolan, and I had heard from a number of people that Ingram was their guy, and they hoped he would slip. He goes the pick in front of him, but they wasted no time jumping on Shea McClellan. Phil Emery has insisted that McClellan was the guy they targeted. That may or may not be. I'm not disputing that. But what intrigues me about this pick is he wasn't a shock. A lot of people had Shea McClellan at the bottom of the first round. People had matched him up with New England at 27, the Packers at 28. But most of the teams talking about Shea McClellan had him as a stand-up outside rushbacker in the 3-4. Phil Emery insists that he's a four-down player at left defensive end. And boy, at 19, with Chandler Jones and others still on the board, this one seemed like a Bruce Irvin-type reach.
When you look at what Shea McClellan really can do, I think you got to look at his versatility. And there are a lot of teams around the league that think he's going to plug in at middle linebacker and eventually be Brian Urlacher's replacement. There were some concussion issues in his past. He does have short arms that measured under 32 inches at the Senior Bowl. He did play at the Senior Bowl at 248 pounds. And I don't think he shows explosive body power to really make a difference off the edge. But I think what Ron Marinelli really likes in his defense is discipline and sound technique. And McClellan brings very active hands. He's going to be in the right spot at the right time. And I think there's a chance he could be a functional starter in the NFL.
With the 20th pick in the first round, the Tennessee Titans stepped in to take wide receiver Kendall Wright out of Baylor, RG3's main target in Baylor. I wonder about this pick. Where does he fit on your draft board, Nolan? Is this about where you expected him to go?
Somewhere in the back of the first round is about right for how he graded on tape. He showed a lot of playmaking ability, but there were teams that looked at Randall Cobb a year ago and said, he's not the same player that Randall was, and positioned him in the third round, especially after he measured at 16% body fat at the combine, one of the highest ever for a receiver, especially in the last decade or so. So there are some concerns there about his work ethic. We'll see whether he can pan out in Tennessee.
Coming up, the New England Patriots move up twice in the first round of the draft, and we'll have details for you when we continue on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to this NFL Draft edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and NFL draft expert, Nolan O'Rourke, this is Wayne Larrivee. We are analyzing the first round of the NFL Draft, and we've moved on to the 24th pick in the first round. The New England Patriots acquired it from Cincinnati, and they select Chandler Jones, the defensive end, out of Syracuse. So Bill Belichick addressing that defensive need, Nolan, early on here.
Yeah, what he really needed was some more pass rushing help. You look at Mark Anderson moving on to Buffalo and Andre Carter coming off injury. Still being unsigned, I think they really needed to find some edge rushers, and they found one of the best in the draft in Chandler Jones. If you look at his measurables on paper, it compares very favorably to Aldon Smith a year ago. He doesn't have the same kind of burst, but I think in another year or two, once he really develops his core strength, I think he can become that type of player and really bring a lot of heat off of the edge. He's also big enough to help on the inside. He's just a phenomenal talent. Has 36-inch arms that when they're spread, he makes them very difficult on the front line. So I think he's going to be a great pick for the New England Patriots.
You know, Nolan, rarely can you say, boy, I had this pick. But I was on the air with our Cleveland affiliate about a week and a half ago, and they were talking about trading up to take Ryan Tannehill or taking him at number four. And I said, that's insanity. You got to take Trent Richardson, and at 22, you're going to take Brandon Weeden. I mean, this was a perfect fit. You could see it coming a mile away, and the Browns surprised and disappointed nobody when they did it.
Yeah, with the value for quarterbacks now in the first round being paid like below-average starters, the backups, especially at this spot, it makes so much sense to keep loading up at the quarterback position. Weeden on tape graded out more like a second-round pick, but I think the Cleveland Browns felt very comfortable, especially with their quarterback situation. They had to get better and improve upon Colt McCoy. So Whedon's going to plug in there. I think they'd like to plug him in from day one if they can, and we'll see how quick it takes him to really develop there.
Well, he's a very good athlete, but he's also 28 years old. He played minor league baseball for a number of years. And guys, is he ready to step in? Is he one of those ready-made players that can come in and play the most important position on the field right away? What do you think, Nolan?
Yeah, it took him 3 years at Oklahoma State. And, he really learned it, spent time learning the ropes. And, he's got a work ethic. You look at what he did as a senior, he was the only quarterback in his class that beat Ryan Tannehill, Robert Griffin, and Andrew Luck. So there are some positives there. There were concerns about his arm strength, just whether there was too much wear and tear on his arm from the minor league baseball career. There were times in practice when he had to be sat out and didn't throw a lot down the field. So I think there's some reason for concern, but given his age, I think they're going to try to plug him in right away and get something out of him.
And I know these next two picks, and this is where you talk about guys who get it, guys who know how to draft. I really like what Marty Mayhew's done in his short tenure in Detroit. And, of course, Kevin Colbert's been doing it forever in Pittsburgh. And this is what bothered me so much about the Chargers at 18 and the Bears at 19, where, they had two real needs. Both teams needed a pass rusher, but both teams really needed offensive line help. And they reached for the pass rusher instead of taking the best talent on the board. For the Detroit Lions to get Riley Reiff at 23, and then the Steelers get David DeCastro at 24, who I think may eventually be the best player in this draft, these were two of my favorite picks.
Yeah, I think they're both very sound. They will be very solid starters in the NFL. Believe it or not, there were a number of teams that had graded Riley Reiff as a third rounder. There were concerns about his short arms. Teams had said that they saw him having third-round feet and fourth-round explosions. So I think there were some mixed opinions on the player. I think he's very tough and very technique sound and will be able to plug in right away at guard and eventually replace Jeff Backus at left tackle. He's a similar type of talent to Michael Ruiz, plays with great angles and efficiency, and I think he could be a very good starter.
The New England Patriots sent a fourth-round draft choice to Denver to move up into the first round again to get the 25th pick in the first round. Inside linebacker Dante Hightower of Alabama, the fourth Alabama player picked in the first 25 selections in the NFL draft. What kind of player can we expect him to be on this level?
He was a top 15 type of talent if you look at the tape. Very explosive body power, just drives guys back. I didn't see anybody harder in this year's draft. Any more of a hard hitter. It's just amazing some of the shots that he delivered. Outstanding take on strength with Brandon Gerard Mayo and the other linebacker there in New England. I think there's a good chance that they'll start him outside and pair him with Chandler Jones and really try to improve the pressure packages. He did it on third down at Alabama. I think there's a chance that they'll start him right away as a rush linebacker for the New England Patriots.
You know, we look at 26 and the Houston Texans, and Whitney Mercilus is a guy. Illinois, of course, was the best linebacker in the country. I guess the Ted Hendricks Award winner this past year, but it was a breakout season. He came out of nowhere, and I can't escape the comparisons. Nobody was really sure what DeMarcus Ware was coming out of a small school in Texas, and we saw what Wade, I'm not in Texas, but going to the Cowboys in Texas, and we saw what Wade Phillips did with him. I suspect that part of the magic here is the fit. Wade Phillips with that Houston defense will know what to do with Mercilus and bring him along at the right pace.
Yeah, it took him some time at Illinois to really bring it together, and you question his instincts. He's a little bit green in that area. You wish he were more naturally instinctive and didn't take as long to process the game and sort things out. But when you look at what he's done on paper with his measurables, his production, led the nation in sacks and had 9 forced fumbles, there's a lot of reason to be encouraged. He has a good work ethic, solid character, and I think he's a guy that could in a couple of years become a very good player, especially in that system.
Coming up, the last six picks of the first round of the NFL Draft. More analysis next on Pro Football Weekly. We continue with this draft edition of Pro Football Weekly, along with Hub Arkish and Nolan Naraki, the senior editor and author of Pro Football Weekly's draft preview book. I'm Wayne Larrabee. We're into the final stages of the first round, the 27th pick overall of the first round, the Cincinnati Bengals from the New Orleans Saints via the Patriots. This particular pick has been swapped a few times, but they get Kevin Zeitler, the guard out of Wisconsin, and plugs a gap for the Bengals on their offensive line, Nolan.
Yeah, it was really unique. It was seeing that the Bengals move down. They're one of the teams like the Cardinals that seldom trade. And it just goes to show you what this rookie wage scale did to the first round, that the Bengals dealt down a couple times and still landed the player they wanted. Kevin Zeitler to the Bengals was even better a better player than David DeCastro. They had him rated higher. I think he'll be a very good pro. Could step in right away and allow Trevell Wharton to become a swing tackle. And I think it's a very good pick for Paul Alexander, the offensive line coach.
Nolan, I've got to ask both you and then Wayne about the Green Bay Packers pick at 28. A lot of people had Nick Perry of USC matched up with the Packers, thought this was a good fit. There will be the inevitable comparisons to Clay Matthews, of course. There shouldn't be. There are two different types of football players. But they're hoping that they've got USC bookend rush linebackers now in Green Bay.
Yeah, I think there was a comfort level knowing that they were able to convert Clay Matthews from that 4-3 defense. But it did raise some concerns around the league because of the character. Perry it wasn't known for his intelligence, and there were some issues there in his past. I think it's something that could work out well in Pittsburgh and Green Bay just because of the system that they run. It's very simple, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's got clear upfield rush ability and power to really come off the edge and set it the way Kevin Green likes.
He'll be working with two very good veteran coaches, defensive line coach Mike Turgovac. If the Packers have Perry slated for some defensive end work, and that's what he played at USC, and also outside linebackers coach Kevin Green. These are two of the most skilled assistant coaches I've been around, guys, and they will be the coaches guiding Nick Perry, especially Kevin Green, converting him to the outside linebacker spot. So the kid certainly has a chance in Green Bay. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Vikings trade back up into the first round with some of the picks they acquired earlier in the night, and they get the safety Harrison Smith out of Notre Dame. Hub, is this a good fit for them?
Well, you know, it's a good fit, but again, and guys, I love Rick Spielman, and I want this to go well, but I thought that they reached so far. Yes, he was the only other safety worthy of looking at probably in the first two rounds. Yes, it was a need, but he doesn't help your football team nearly as much as Morris Claiborne would have been with that first pick, and there were still plenty of good left tackle prospects that they could have taken here, probably without even trading up. So, Nolan, maybe I'm being too hard on him, but I become frustrated when I see teams drafting the 38th or 40th best player at 29.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a reach, but when you look at the safety board, after Harrison Smith, there was very little there. There were only two starting caliber safeties in this draft, and Harrison was the best free safety, so I think they did reach a little bit, but he should be able to plug into that system and be a solid player.
Meanwhile, San Francisco 49ers, everybody talking, they've got to get more at wide receiver, and they take A.J. Jenkins out of Illinois. Nolan, did they reach a little bit with this pick? Because I saw a lot of teams consider Jenkins a high second-round pick.
Yeah, there were teams that even had him in the third because of the character concerns, but you look at what he did in that offense, I think it was a very unique situation with the coaching staff knowing at midseason that they were going to get fired. He had to play in the bowl game against UCLA with the interim coach, and he had to deal with a tough set of circumstances. If you just look at what he does purely on tape with 4-3 type speed, he is a outstanding route runner. He's football smart. I think he has a lot of upside. I think he could be a very explosive player for Jim Harbaugh, and I think he will be able to contribute readily.
No, at 31 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and listen, I understand, Cadillac Williams is on his third set of tires. That's pretty much done. And we'll get to hamster cheeks in a minute. Why are they not, they don't seem to like LeGarrette Blount. The Bucs made it known that they wanted to get a running back. I know Blount will play there too. But to me, Blount looks like a guy who can be your franchise hammer, and yet they were determined to get a running back high.
Yeah, I think the big issue with Blount has been the maturity and the weight fluctuations. I think they've had some problems there, and one of the things Greg Schiano is looking to do is really establish more discipline in the program, more accountability, and I think that's where they felt like they needed to get better at that position. They had a big need at linebacker as well, and I thought they might go in that direction, but Doug Martin is the only other bell cow outside of Trent Richardson, and I think they felt like they had to move up there to get him.
New York Giants get David Wilson, the running back out of Virginia Tech. Obviously, they lost Brandon Jacobs in the offseason in free agency. Ahmad Bradshaw's had foot issues. What kind of role does David Wilson play?
He's a playmaker. I thought he was one of the most underrated players in this draft. He has outstanding balance and body control. And it's going to be an interesting situation with Jason Pierre-Paul. You know, they really like guys that can have the ability to do backflips. It just shows the athleticism and balanced of both players. They're already talking about having a contest between the two of them to see who can do more backflips. So, you know, it's. I think he's a great player. I expect him to come in right away and provide a spark to that running game. And I think he'll be a very good player.
Nolan Nowrocki, senior editor, Pro Football Weekly. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen, with the publisher and editor, Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, as unusual as it may be in draft week, there were two additional stories, huge stories that broke that I think are worthy of comment. One, the accusations against Saints general manager Mickey Loomis on the heels of the Saints' bounty problems that he had wired his booth at the Dome in New Orleans to listen to the opposing team's coaches. The Saints have denied it as strongly as they can, and Loomis has now come out angrily and said, how ridiculous is this? Now, the network that broke the story on the program that they broke it is usually pretty good. They do their homework. They're investigative journalism. But in this case, everybody I've talked to has said, this is insane. There'd be no value in doing it. You couldn't do it. And I suspect this time we're going to see the Saints are vindicated. The other story, it's not official, but there are rumors everywhere. The NFL getting ready to suspend the Pro Bowl? No more Pro Bowl? Thank God. Who needs it? I mean, it's great for the players to get the trip to Hawaii and to get the, you know, the credit and all that, but you can pick an all-star team without playing a Pro Bowl. And I kept asking myself, why do they keep jamming this down our throats? Of course, you don't have to watch it, but a lot of people did. But what's noteworthy about this is there's big television dollars that the NFL is going to walk away from because they were so embarrassed about the horrible performance in the last game. If, in fact, they do it, my hat's off to Roger Goodell and everybody for doing the right thing and not trying to sell us something that isn't worthy of the NFL brand.
Trust me, Hub, they'll find a way to get those TV dollars back, no doubt about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush, Nolan Nowrocki, and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.